I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. As we begin the new week, we will touch on the conclusion of the Q4 reporting season, interpret what recent data is telling us, preview what you need to know, and discuss how you should be positioned accordingly. My guest today is David Lefkowitz, Senior Equity Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, David, welcome back. Hope you had a nice weekend. Good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here in your new studio, Dan.
It's very exciting. You're the first Top of the Morning podcast to be recorded in this studio, so very exciting, and congratulations to you on that.
Okay, thanks.
So I know Q4 reporting season, David, it's winding down, as we all know. What are the takeaways from the reports we've seen, and how did everything shape up relative to your expectations heading in?
Right. Yeah, so we're about 80% of the way done with earnings season, and that's based on the market cap of the S&P 500 companies that have reported. And I would say the main takeaway is that the outlook is improving. The areas that have been solid over the last few quarters continue to remain pretty healthy, specifically the consumer. And consumer spending is 70% of the economy, so that's an important component of the outlook. And then the IT spending generally also looks to be pretty supportive. So those two areas have been strong or healthy, I would say, over the last few quarters. What has been weaker in 2019 have been a few different end markets: semiconductors, short cycle industrials, and energy and materials. And all three of them, well, let me just say, at least two of them look like they're getting better. Semiconductors look like they've clearly turned the corner. We're seeing some big upward surprises, especially from Intel and some of the semi-cap equipment companies. Some of the analog companies also reporting solid numbers. Short cycle industrials, it looks like activity is bottoming, and they're seeing some better results out of China. And the one area that is still a bit weak is energy, or our energy and materials, some of the commodity spaces. Here, they're still being plagued by a bit of oversupply. So the areas that have been strong continue to remain so, and the areas that have been weak, many of them are showing signs of improvement. Very quickly on the coronavirus, most companies are really not calling out too much around that. There are a few that have highlighted there could be an impact on the demand side of the equation, and they're providing a wider band of guidance range for the first quarter. But with the factories potentially getting back to production today in China, we should get a little bit more color on what the impact is, but we don't think it's going to be that large, and if anything, it's going to be temporary. So putting it all together, we were looking for 1% earnings growth in 2019. Looks like we're very much on track for that to improve and be about 6% in 2020. Again, because of the improvement we're seeing in some of the areas that have been weak in 2019.
Just on the coronavirus, expanding on that for a moment, because I know it's something of interest to our clients, companies commenting on the potential impact to business on a going forward basis. Do you feel that commentary is limited because these companies simply don't know what this time, it's just too much of an unknown?
Yeah, no, their companies are operating with imperfect information, just as everybody else is. So there's, I would say there's kind of two or three elements that we can think about. One is what's the story with production and supply, right? Any company that gets supplies from China is going to be impacted in some way. Now, the factories are beginning to get back to work today. So as long as factories do start ramping up, shouldn't be a big problem for global supply chains, but we'll be watching that closely. On the demand side, I mean, a lot of Chinese consumers have been at home for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where the bigger impact has been, and that's what we've heard from some of the U.S. consumer companies, Nike, Apple, Starbucks. But again, these are temporary effects, and and it looks like there are signs that the spread of the virus is beginning to peak, and we should start to see some light at the end of the tunnel for everyone who's been affected. So, but we'll be watching that closely. But yeah, fully agree, Dan, with your premise that at this point it's a little bit of guesswork in terms of what the impact is.
Appreciate the added insights there, David. Now, in terms of U.S. economic data, what kind of messaging are we receiving on that front? I know on Friday we had a very strong January non-farm payroll number.
Right.
Unemployment rate pretty much in line with what was expected. What are your thoughts on recent data, what it's telling us?
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar to the story from earnings, that things are getting better. I would highlight three data points that in my mind are some of the most important readings that we get on a monthly basis. You mentioned the job report. Very solid. I mean, obviously, a little bit of a boost from the very unseasonably warm weather probably did contribute. But still, even if you normalize for that, job market looks to remain pretty healthy. I mean, I like to look at the weekly unemployment claims. Those continue to suggest that businesses are continuing to hire at a nice pace. So not laying off people at an accelerated pace. So. I think the labor market is still quite healthy. Importantly, in the labor market report, wages were growing, but not at a pace that is going to be troubling for the Fed. So that means that the Fed can likely remain on hold for a long period, for at least some time, because the wage pressures don't look like they're feeding into any type of price increases. The other two readings I think are worth highlighting. We had the ISM manufacturing index that was out last week. It punched above 50 for the first time since July. So the manufacturing sector is now back in expansion, according to this survey. It's just a sentiment survey, so it's not necessarily an activity survey. So just bear that in mind. But the good news is that this manufacturing, kind of global manufacturing soft patch that we've been contending with over the last 18 months or so, looks like there's just more evidence that it's getting better. And that's the same message we were talking about from earnings season.
Especially here in the U.S. relative to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, the weakness was most pronounced outside the U.S. China, Europe really saw a much more material downturn in their manufacturing sectors. In the U.S., it's been a more shallow downturn, but nonetheless, it's been a headwind. But as we were just talking about from earnings season, I think you're starting to see some bottoming there. Perhaps the trade deal that was consummated in January has helped to improve sentiment a bit, because it was a pretty big jump in this reading. On the services side, the services also sentiment remains pretty healthy. That's really no change from what we've seen over the last several months and almost years at this point, that the services side of the economy is doing well. And then the last thing I want to just highlight is the Fed puts out a quarterly survey of banks and what they're doing with credit. And in other words, how difficult or easy is it for them for banks to extend credit? How difficult or easy is it for customers to get access to bank credit? And what that survey showed is that banks continue to lend at a pace that is supportive for the economy. So they're not tightening credit standards. They're not loosening them on net. They're just keeping standards the same. That's a really important leading indicator. When banks are tightening by 20% of banks or more are tightening, that tends to be very restrictive conditions that can lead to a recession. The message we're getting from the bank survey is that conditions remain very favorable, and just another support point for the continuation of this expansion.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, in terms of what's coming up this week, we mentioned the coronavirus. I'm sure that's at the top of the list. What will you be keeping an eye out for? That may move markets.
Yeah, so we're past some of the biggest data points, but yeah, the coronavirus and the progress that we're seeing there, that's going to be important, because the market is, I think, anticipating a beginning of a resumption of normalcy in China. And if that doesn't happen over the course of this week, and I said, as we mentioned, looking at what's happening to the ramp up back up of factories in China, if that doesn't happen, then there could be some risks in the market, very short term risks. the primary season is in full swing now, so we'll have the New Hampshire primary. You know, I would say this is not a huge issue for stocks at this point, but obviously getting some more clarity on who the nominee will be in the Democratic from the Democratic Party is important for markets. But usually markets don't spend a great deal of emphasis, or don't place a lot of emphasis on this until we start getting to the conventions, because oftentimes candidates pivot to the center after the primary season, so we won't get a really clear view on what the sort of race will look like between the two parties and the two candidates until we get to the summer. And then we still have some earnings season, some earnings reports, but they're not, we're sort of winding down. We've got about 57 companies reporting this week, about 7% of the S&P 500. And as I said, most, we're already 80% done. So I don't think it's going to move the needle tremendously, but you could see some single stock volatility as a result of that.
Okay, so a fair amount to look forward to this week. I did see that Pete Buttigieg was declared the victor in Iowa, 14 delegates, I believe Bernie Sanders gets 12, but as you mentioned, voters will go to the polls in New Hampshire tomorrow,
right.
So that will be something to keep an eye out for. Now, in terms of how the equity markets have been behaving, I know we had a bit of weakness on Friday. Mm-hmm. If you look at the futures here in the U.S. this morning, they are pointing to a lower open, but for the most part, U.S. equities have mostly recouped the losses from concerns about the coronavirus. So, David, what should investors be doing at this point in time?
Yeah, so we're not negative on U.S. stocks, but I do think that they are pricing in a fair amount of the good news. As we were just talking about, I do think recession risks are low, business momentum is picking up. So that means that downside risks to the stock market don't look particularly high at this point. But valuations have moved up, and they're now the highest they've been really, since the financial crisis, but even since before the financial crisis. We think they're fair. Valuations are fair in the context of relatively healthy growth, low unemployment rate, low inflation, low interest rates. That kind of supportive environment leads to higher than average valuations, and that's where we roughly are right now. So we think there's a little bit more upside in the U.S. Our price target on the S&P 500 is 3,400 by mid-year. That's a couple percent away from where we are right now. But we're not sort of pounding the table on U.S. stocks given the issues I just talked about. Where we do see some better opportunity is in emerging markets, emerging market equities, where I think you're going to see, we just talked about this global manufacturing cycle beginning to improve. Those parts of the market have been hurt more by the slowdown, and should therefore see a bigger recovery. We're seeing also this year, we think GDP growth in emerging markets is going to outpace by a wider margin, outpace developed markets. That tends to be a favorable backdrop for emerging market equities. And you also have more attractive valuations. We were just talking about U.S. valuations have moved up. EM has moved up as well, but they're still trading at a pretty sizable discount to the U.S. So that would be, in our view, that's the best place to be looking at this point, and to play an improvement in the global economic cycle as 2020 unfolds.
Do you have a sense for how EM equities have fared relative to U.S. equities, given the fallout from the coronavirus? If anything, does it underscore the case to consider EM equities for your portfolio, unlocking further opportunities?
I think so, because EM equity, look, I mean, China's the center of the storm,
right,
with respect to the virus. So EM equities, and China's a big component of EM, it's about 30% of the EM benchmark. EM equities sold off harder and haven't rebounded nearly as much as U.S. markets have. So if you're playing some normalization from the coronavirus, there also looks like to be better opportunity in emerging markets because they haven't recouped all of their losses yet. So from that perspective, I think it makes sense. But obviously, the coronavirus also negatively impacts EM more so than developed markets. But still, I think the fact that we're getting more and more signs that the number of new cases was plateauing and starting outside of Wuhan province. It has plateaued outside of China, mm-hmm. and now it looks like we're starting to get some indications that it is beginning to plateau even within Wuhan province, where the worst of the effects are being seen. So mm-hmm. all good news in terms of getting to a point where we start to see, again, some light at the end of the tunnel around the coronavirus. But obviously, we'll be watching that closely for confirmation.
Yeah, there was a media report out this morning indicating that China will be committing some $10 billion in efforts to combat and contain the virus in China. So that was encouraging to see. But David, it was great catching up with you today. We broke in the new studio,
yes.
And I'm sure we'll be doing a lot more podcasts in the weeks and months to come. But great insights as always, David. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And again, we have been joined by David Lefkowitz, Senior Equity Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. There are many publications available now up on UBS Online Services. If you are a client of UBS, just reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of any of the publications directly. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.